Hey, Flora, it's Prashant, your fact buddy. I don't know, remember me? I don't know if you're facting with anybody else right now, but the last time we facted, I thought it was really good. I had a really good time. I don't want this to come off thirsty or clingy in any way, but I was hoping I could come by and fact with you a little bit.
I am here for this. ELT is long overdue for a fact buddy. That's on today's show. Welcome to our very glamorous studio, Prashant.
I like this abandoned toilet paper roll here.
Prashant Venkat is back. Prashant, today we are multitasking, so I am going to wow you with ridiculous facts, as usual.
Please me.
And we're going to answer listener questions.
Okay.
Starting with this one that I know is right up your alley.
I'm wanting to know what the origin of the modern day clown attire is.
This is in your wheelhouse, right?
That's right. Right.
Caller Brian asked about clowns and why they look the way they do. And we could fill a clown car with apparel facts. But let's get to the essence of a clown. And I want you to zero in on their heads.
Shoulder up.
Yeah. It's like they always say, the head is the window to the clown. So what comes to mind?
Well, for some reason, all classic clowns have very strange balding patterns. They've got just a clean noggin. And then there's just insane hair coming out of the sides.
Vivid.
It's like if Wolverine balded. So that's the first thing. And then there's the red nose, obviously. There's the white face.
And the red mouth.
Yeah, it's like they smile and then paint in the wrinkles of their smile. This is such a weird exercise because it's making me think of a clown face. And the descriptions now are very, very odd.
Okay, what is the deal with this odd, yet classic, clown face? We talked to a clown.
My name is Julie Lovely Buttons Varholt.
J-Lo Button says that, like clown hair, clown history is unruly.
Okay.
So clowns have been around for millennia, probably since the dawn of men. But this particular clown look that you're talking about, Prashant, like the bozo Ronald McDonald look, started with a performer in London in the late 1700s.
You're talking about Joseph Grimaldi. He was an actual theater performer, and they just called him a clown.
The character was mischievous. He was dressed in goofy clown pattern clothes, and he had the makeup. And Joseph is credited with originating this iconic makeup. In fact, for years after, clowns were called Joeys after him. So there you go, listener Brian. There's a mini origin story for you. But Prashant, my fact buddy.
Yes.
Before we leave clowns, I have another fact just for you.
Fact buddies.
Fantastic.
Okay, so there is this makeup template, but then you can personalize it. And Button says that if you are a clown, your makeup is your brand. More than your clothes or your wig, your makeup is what sets you apart.
Yeah.
So if you want your eyebrows shaped like donkeys or...
Okay.
Or your lips painted up to your eyes.
You need a signature. You need a makeup catchphrase.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that makes your makeup your intellectual property. That's clown IP. IP you might want to protect if you make it to the big top.
Did you know that you can register your face, your clown face?
Are you serious?
It's, this is my face. It's on registry. You can't have it.
Okay. So I'm a clown at home in a boot. I don't know. Where do clowns live? And I gotta register my face before some amateur comes in and treads on my turf.
And steals my donkey eyebrows.
Yeah, steals my donkey eyebrows. Where do you register this?
Okay, well, how do you imagine this register works?
I just imagine, like, it's in a file somewhere. There's some insane repository that's just got clown faces.
You're imagining digital photos in a database.
Yes.
Okay, think more tactile and a little bit rounder.
What it is they take the clown's face and they draw it on an egg.
What?
It's called the clown egg register.
Is this, they're real eggs or are they like fake plastic?
They originally started out on goose eggs, I believe, but the eggs got so fragile that a lot of the original eggs are cracked because, you know, eggs crack. But now they have them on porcelain eggs.
But, okay.
I think you should see them.
Okay.
Okay, let me pull some up. And if you're listening at home and you want to see these, and I feel like you really do, want to see them, go to ELT Show on Twitter or Facebook. Okay, Prashant, are you ready?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. First of all, let me say the detail is striking.
Yes, they look like they're very faithful renderings of the clowns that you are familiar with.
This must be painted with the legs of ants. Like, I can't imagine how they get this level of detail.
It looks like a real face.
Yeah. And the oval shape of the egg makes it even more jarring because it matches heads.
Human heads. Human heads, yeah.
But then all of them have toppers.
Yes. This is how Headmaster Buttons puts it.
If they have a smidge of their wig, they'll take and actually glue it onto the egg to make this egg look exactly like the clown.
These clowns tape their own hair to these eggs.
It might be glue.
Sure. This is so strange.
Yeah, it's like, what is the most improbable way to protect your copyright?
But also the most fragile. Everything about registering something is for perpetuity purposes. And they're like, let's put it on an egg. You know, the thing that represents fragility in metaphor.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the deal. The Register of Eggs lives in England.
I don't know if England is on a fault line of any kind, but let's hope not.
It was started in the 1940s. This guy, Stan Bolt, who is a founding member of Clowns International, actually had a hobby of painting clown faces on eggs, and that's how this register began. And over time, the collection became this, like, extremely unlikely way of trademarking and registering clown faces. And it includes 30 dozen eggs and counting.
30 dozen?
Well, that's the egg metric. About 300, over 300 eggs.
Yeah, but that seems low to me.
Yes. So it is both a way to register a face and also it's kind of an honor to get in.
Oh.
Yeah. Lovely Buttons actually just got inducted.
Huh, to me, you've gotten to another level of clowning, because I never, ever thought my egg would be in the clown registry.
She said it was basically a dream come true.
Oh.
Next up, we have another question. This one comes from Jordan in Arkansas. Again, right up your alley, because I know how much you like overalls.
What's the deal with scarecrows? Do they work? How effective are they? I'm just curious.
It does sound like he woke up from like a 3-hour nap and was just like, his first call was to the ELT hotline.
Agree. Okay, Prashant, scarecrows, do you think they scare crows?
The little I do know about crows, right? They're very intelligent. So does that mean they recognize the shape of a human being and they go, there's a human just standing perfectly still in that field? Or are they so smart that they're like, get out of here? Like, it's like that situation.
Yes, exactly. That is the exact question that we felt like we needed to parse. Like, how good at recognizing human beings are crows. After the break, we go inside the mind of a crow. Okay, we are investigating whether scarecrows work.
Okay.
And to do that, we need a crow's eye view.
I have thought about what crows are thinking and have been inside the mind of crows as best I can for quite a while.
This is Kevin McGowan. He's been studying crows for more than 30 years. And in terms of how effective scarecrows might be at scaring crows, this is the headline.
Crows actually do pay a great deal of attention to their surroundings, and especially people.
Especially people. And he has crazy stories to back this up. Stories that will change the way that you think about scarecrows forever.
Forever. Forever. Forever.
Sure.
So for many years, Kevin surveyed baby crows. He banded them and tracked them. And this did not go unnoticed by the crow community.
For the first decade, basically, they hated me because I was the guy that climbed up to their nests. And so they would actually go away and raise a crowd and then come back.
So the crows he encountered directly began to recognize him. But not only that, they seemed to tell their friends to watch out for him, too.
I would end up being in places around town where I had never looked for nests there, but these crows knew me and they would yell at me. And I was like, I don't know you, but they must have been part of that crowd.
I don't know you.
So, yeah, and I mean, you get paranoid after a while, you know, when you're just walking around and those crows are talking about me.
Oh, my gosh. It's almost like the crows have like an FBI watch list.
Yes, and there are studies backing this up, both crows' ability to ID people and to spread that knowledge to other crows. Like, they are just really good at recognizing humans.
They somehow know us as individuals and seem to be able to do it in approximately the same way that we do. And that is that you learn the face and then you learn their walk or you learn the car.
Did you hear that? Learned the car.
What?
Crows can learn your personal motor vehicle.
They know my car driving down the highway at 55 miles an hour.
How is that possible?
I don't know. Because mine's not a very distinctive car.
He drives a Subaru Impreza.
And do you know how many Subarus there are in Ithaca, New York? Thousands.
And here is Kevin's proof that the crows know his particular Subaru. After 10 years of being maligned by crows, Kevin got sick of it. He wanted to get off the crow's most wanted list. And so he started feeding the crows around town peanuts. He became Mr. Peanut of the crow community. So one day, Kevin is driving through town.
There's a state highway that goes past the lab. And, you know, it's two-lane, but 55 miles an hour and fairly heavy traffic. And this guy was up on a big power pylon.
By this guy, you mean a crow?
A crow, yeah. And so he saw me in a line of traffic, and he dived off that pylon. And using that momentum, he caught up to my car and hovered over my right fender for a second or two. And so I stopped and I threw him some peanuts.
You pulled over?
Yep.
You pulled off the highway?
I did, because I was just so impressed with what he had just shown me he could do.
It worked.
It did work.
Kevin, if a crow is training you to pull off the highway and feed him, the crow, peanuts, how on earth would a scarecrow, a blob wearing overalls, work on a crow? It just doesn't add up.
It does not, does it? Yes, it just seems like a highly unlikely thing once you realize what a crow can do, that a scarecrow would have any effect on a crow at all.
You know what it is? This is classic hubris on our part. We think we understand where the animal kingdom is operating at, or this particular animal, and we're like, yeah, let's get some hay and some overalls. And and a cross and just, you know, hand wave them away.
On these animals that can...
The dolphins of the sky? Come on, what are we doing here? It really is like the only thing that would scare off a crow is like a robot that can pass the Turing test.
It's like Bernard from Westworld is who should be out in that field.
Yes. And even then, I feel like they'd know something was up.
Okay, Prashant, one more thing before you go. We got a message from listener Nick, and this message actually does have something to do with you.
This is a suggestion, not a question. I would really like a site in which I could match with a fact buddy.
Tinder for fact buddy?
Yes. People want new people to fact with, and so we're going to try a little experiment.
What? Really?
Yes, we are building a fact exchange program so ELT listeners can get their facting on. Here's how it works. Send us a postcard in the mail with your best fact written on it. Bring your A game, and we will send you a fact postcard in return. Bonus, for the first 50 people who write us, we will send you an official ELT flamingo keychain bottle opener. Include your contact info in the card. We won't share it, but let us know how to reach you. And address the card to Every Little Thing, Gimlet Media, 92 3rd Street, Brooklyn, New York, 11231, or you can find the address at elt.show. We'll share the best ones on Twitter and Facebook, and if you have a great fact, we may call you and ask you to deliver it on the show. Okay, get facting.
Every Little Thing is produced by Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Bradley Campbell, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Ian Chillug and Caitlin Kenny. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. Crows are afraid of me. Goodbye.